Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 70 and we are back for the new year. My name is Mark Carey and joining me as ever is Ryan Bailey. Ryan, I would say Happy New Year to you, but I have seen you a lot in real life. But from a podcast perspective, it is Happy New Year to you.
And I've got a few things to say on that, because normally at what point do you stop saying Happy New Year? Because at the time of recording, this is the 20th of January, which feels a little bit late to be saying Happy New Year. And another point is that also other people were recording things and saying Happy New Year probably earlier in January. And here we are. Doing it now, but that's fine. It's been a very busy time. What the listeners might not know from just hearing this is the fact that me and Mark are in the same room, because it's been a very busy time. Mark, can you explain why?
Well, over the festive period, I moved, not because you live at a certain area of the country, but I moved very close to you such that I can actually walk to your house. So the acoustics are good, because we are both in the same room, able to record the podcast from the same room far more often now, rather than how we did it previously, which was a lot over Zoom.
And people might think, God, he's keen. why is he moved near where the other one for podcasting? Wow, that's a big life change. But there was obviously other reasons involved.
Well, to put it from a statistical perspective, correlation is not causation, right? And it's not because...
And we are back.
Yeah, we very much are back.
And
we?
We're back into the flow. But do you know what? No, people might be like, oh, who are the Football Fanalytics podcast? Because it's been quite a while since we recorded last time. It's basically, the long and short of it is, and the sad long and short of it is, that we've just got lives and jobs, which one of us, again, sad for me, because it's not me, works very much in football. And obviously, as most of our listeners will know, the World Cup happened, didn't it? And you were just a very busy man, weren't you, over that time?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's busy throughout the whole of the year. But I do think that, yeah, especially during the World Cup, it was just relentless. There were a lot of days where it was four games per day. So to be able to fit in a podcast, which we did fit in one during the World Cup, which we can... allude to, because it was very, very relevant to what actually happened. But yeah, we are back now because things have gone slightly quieter. And I think what we could do is frame this as a new series. We've sort of been kind of omnipresent since we started. But I think if we can frame this as a new series, we're going to very much think of quality over quantity. And whenever a podcast sort of drops, it might not be every week, but it'll hopefully be good whenever it will come out.
And I can always walk round to your house now and go, oi, where's the podcast this week? Which is fun. The World Cup, it's funny just talking about the World Cup. The World Cup seems ages away, doesn't it? Or ages ago. I mean, you've probably got PTSD and have repressed it slightly, because that would have been a very different time for you. Were you, I mean, you know, no one cares about the World Cup anymore. Things move on, football moves on very quick. But was it good? Did you enjoy it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like almost saying, like, I like chocolate cake, but if I was asked to eat a whole chocolate cake rather than a slice, you'd start to feel a little bit sick.
Yeah, like the guy out of Matilda.
That is exactly how, yeah, that is exactly my analogy that I was thinking of. I think it's more like that. I mean, I did absolutely love it. The final was incredible. But as you say, it just feels like so long ago now that it's almost weird to speak about it, but it's the first time since we've last recorded that, you know, that we've had the chance to speak about it. So, yeah, I definitely think that is the case. I did a sort of a data column in the days after the World Cup, literally the days after, so probably within about 48 hours.
Yeah.
And I do think that even by then, people were like, yeah, it's fine, we're back to the domestic
league. The Premier League's coming back now, yeah.
Or, you know, whatever domestic league. It definitely felt like that. So you just switch back to whatever's in front of you. So we're back to the domestic leagues.
Yeah, and it was so long ago, in fact, that the last episode we did was with Jonathan Clegg, which was really good fun. But we were talking about, you know, Messi versus Ronaldo, the book that that they'd written. And we were sort of preempting, oh, well, this was just after Messi had lost to Saudi Arabia and Ronaldo had just left Man United. We were going, oh, you know, it could be, who knows what could happen. Obviously, very different endings for Mr. Messi and Mr. Ronaldo. Thoughts on the Ronaldo Saudi move before? I know that's old news now, but I just want to ask anyway.
Yeah, it was all a bit of a mess, wasn't it? Really, not. I was going to say it was all very messy, but that would make it very strange.
Oh God, that would have been awful.
Unintentionally, but I think that it was just something had to happen with the whole Manchester United sour note that was left on. So I think it's just move on. And since actually he's moved, that Messi and Ronaldo have had a game against each other very, very recently, which is sort of nice to see as well. They had a nice embrace, which I thought was good. But I sort of just let him get his payday now. If he wants to break records in Saudi Arabia, then absolutely go and do that. Good for him. He's in the very much in the twilight of his career, and he doesn't have anything more to prove. So good luck to him.
The last thing I'll say on that is I was thinking this the other day. The person who gets to film when they both retire, the Messi and Ronaldo sit down for a dinner and reflect on their careers and lives and rivalry, because I'm sure that's in the pipeline. Some production company somewhere is thinking that's going to happen. Can you imagine how great that'd be to watch? And it'd break all sorts of records. So, yeah. But I guess the main thing is to say, Mark, we're back, aren't we? Like you say, it might be every 2 weeks. Hopefully it will be. We are very busy at the moment, so we can't commit to doing every week. But we are back. We're looking forward to bringing you some more episodes. And it feels good. It feels good to be back.
It does feel good. I mean, we're back, and we're back in January. And while in most of the episodes that we try to do on this podcast, we try to keep it evergreen. So whatever episode you tune into, it doesn't matter when it is. It will always hopefully be relevant to you. I still think that is definitely going to be the case with this episode. But the fact that it is January, it's made us obviously think about the January transfer window, and not just this January transfer window, but in general, how can players and clubs get value in the transfer window? So I think this could be a very topical, but yet still evergreen episode. So without further ado, let's get back to it, Ryan. So, as we said, it's January, which means that it's the January transfer window. And as I mentioned, I don't think that we are going to associate ourselves with too much kind of gossip stuff. We don't want to cover too much that will become quickly outdated, because there's so many conversations flying around, so many different deals flying around. So we won't cover it in too much depth, because it could quickly become old news. But one thing that I saw recently, which I thought was really interesting, was, I mean, it's a similar time of year where there's a lot of contract negotiation for players looking to either extend their deal, to improve upon their deal, or maybe for some players actually looking for a deal elsewhere, because you can start to have conversations with new clubs from January if your contract is sort of running out or coming to the end of its contract. But one thing that caught my attention was Alex Greenwood, very good centre-back for Manchester City in the WSL. She has utilised data to improve upon her contract and has employed the services of Analytics FC. And I thought this would be something that we could discuss, Ryan.
Absolutely. And also, she's not the first Manchester City player in history to have done that, is she? There was an occasion, wasn't there? I can't remember if we've covered it before, but didn't Kevin De Bruyne do the same, where he kind of commissioned a company. Was it Analytics FC again?
It was the same company, yeah.
Good links, good business from those two. Commissioned Analytics FC to do a report on his game and everything that allowed him to show his importance to Manchester City when renegotiating. So is that what Alex Greenwood has done?
Yeah, it's basically essentially that. The reason that it caught my attention was actually there was a really good article, which we'll link in the bio, written by my colleague and friend, Charlotte Harper, who we've had on this podcast
yes.
in the past. And she basically did a nice report which summarised everything in the report that Alex Greenwood had. So she worked with Analytics FC, spoke with them. They travelled up to Manchester to watch some of the games. They spoke with her and essentially produced this report that looked at all of the financial information, looked at as much as they could, the players' salary, so Alex Greenwood herself, and compared it with her peers in her position and across the WSL to essentially work out what contribution she is adding towards the team based on her statistics. As I say, as a centre-back, but also in comparison to the wider WSL, because what the report suggests is that there's actually less worth kind of given to centre-backs compared with midfielders or attackers. You think of someone like Beth Mead, she's going to be the one to get the headlines.
Yeah.
Maybe not as recently, because obviously she's injured at the moment. But in comparison to the men's game, which is what the report shows, is that they compare it with Virgil van Dijk, actually, interestingly, to show that someone like Virgil van Dijk is given the credit for the actions that he does from a defensive perspective, but also in a wider attacking perspective. And in the WSL, the centre-backs and defenders aren't given as much credit for what they contribute,
really?
Even though they do clearly contribute quite a lot. So they basically, Analytics FC, have this really interesting metric called goal difference added, which shows a really nice way of presenting the contribution that a player makes. And it's much in the same way that we've spoken about many times, things like expected threat, things like possession value, so that you can have a sort of a single figure to show what that player contributes. And Alex Greenwood was shown to have a far greater contribution than any of her peers.
Goal difference added. I haven't actually heard that one before.
It's as I say, it's tapping into the same sort of idea of things like possession value, but it appraised all of the performance metrics, all of her, think of about the wider point as well, of the brand of Alex Greenwood, a recent European Championship winner, obviously a lioness, all of the things that come with it. She should be getting remunerated, she should be getting paid in the same way, if not more, than a lot of the people who are performing either just as well or not as good as her. So it's just the point being, which is why I found it interesting, is that it's not just clubs who are using data to try and scout these players. It's being used in the reverse for the players and the agents to negotiate their contracts and holding the cards just as much as the clubs. And if the clubs say, well, you're actually not worth quite as much, the agents and the players with these data companies say, well, actually we do, therefore give me my money.
They're backing it up
rather than, I guess, in years gone past, in very recent past, it's probably negotiation is probably just one word against another to be like, well, I'm doing really well, I'm performing as good as I've ever been, and they say, well, we don't think you're performing quite as much as the level that we'd like, and then it's just a standoff. Whereas if you can say I'm contributing X goal difference added and all of my other peers are doing sort of half of that as a random number, then how can you really argue with that?
Absolutely, yeah. Very, very interesting. So I've got several questions, but I guess the first thing I'm thinking is this becoming more of a trend that we're starting to see, that players are, well, we know it is because we know the growth of analytics is constantly developing, is constantly getting bigger, but is this something that more players will see more of, and it'll be stuff that they are using more and more? And this is obviously in the context of a contract negotiation. I guess you could also relate this to actual transfers then, like we're saying in the January transfer window, and almost, does it, as much as doing their contribution, does it sort of highlight their playing style and stuff as well? So you can kind of learn what players might be more suited to certain teams or certain styles and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's about six questions in one there, but
it
I'll
was,
take...
wasn't there? It was a long six question one that.
I will take each. Go. I'll take each one in turn if I can remember them all. I think, in terms of, is this a growing trend? I think it is. I think it's still kind of in its infancy in terms of what could be done. I think again, we've spoken about this before in terms of players who have done it in the past, and it's probably a wider point rather than necessarily a contract negotiation. But I think we've spoken before about Memphis Depay,
yeah,
as an example in his, well, now previous club at Lyon. And we spoke about the fact that he connected with a company called Sci Sports, who we've spoken about multiple times. We've had Reece Chambers on the podcast before, who works for Sci Sports. And he basically made contact, Depay made contact with the founder of Sci Sports. And I've got a bit of a quote from one of the founders here to say that he's basically said, Memphis made the first laptop transfer by asking us for transfer advice with data. He said, the agent of Memphis asked us to come to Manchester where he was living. He said he went there with two colleagues and watched a Champions League game on the couch. He discussed the next step in his career. He was really open about what he wanted to do and what he didn't. He said that he wanted to play more freely and he wanted to be important for the team and wanted to play in a big five competition, so top five European leagues,
yeah,
with a coach that had a clear playing style. And we translated these questions into data searches. So we looked at his playing style, his different clubs previously, the Dutch national team, and compared that with his current playing style, and noticed that he was basically involved in a lot more defensive actions at Manchester United than he had been previously, where he was obviously sort of setting the world alight.
Yeah.
So it feeds really well into the idea that you could be a good player objectively, you can be a very skilled player, but if you're not in the right system, you're not in the right style of play, you're not in the right club, then it has to be a kind of a yin and yang. It has to complement each other.
Yeah.
And they found him a club in Lyon where it was going to suit him perfectly. And he went on to do, you know, really good things and got the move to Barcelona off the back of his really good performances for Lyon. So in terms of that being a growing trend, I think it could be more and more important. But I do think it's part of a kind of a wider point that agents now are getting wise to the fact that they could be, it could be really beneficial for them to make more money, which ultimately what they're in it for, but to help the player as well to understand, yes, this club might be offering more money here, but if you go to this club, it'll be better for you. You'll look better. You might even get more marketing deals off the back of it. And it's more of a short term, you might get more money, but long term, you'll get more money from actually performing better, having a better style of play, and it absolutely bringing out all, maximizing your strengths. And that's all through data as well, rather than I think what we've spoken about quite a lot, which is the clubs using data to scout players. It's kind of the reverse is kind of true as well. And don't get me wrong, clubs are very clever in the way that they actually look at it. It's not just who's posting the best XG. They look at whether the player would be a suitable style for the club as well. But the point being, I think there's work. It works both ways.
So this is really interesting, because then I imagine there are so many agents who still are not doing that. So I look at transfers that have happened in the Premier League, just for example, recently. And at the time of the recording, it's Friday night on the 20th of January. So something I say might be completely out of date. But let's look at an example that's happened recently with Mudryk and his sort of flirting with Arsenal in public. And then very last minute, I mean, it's hard when a massive amount of money comes through from an out-of-control Chelsea. That's a conversation for another time, maybe later. But then he obviously made a sort of shock move to Chelsea last minute. There can't have been much data thought and profiling and stuff like that in that decision, surely. Because how can there have been? Or maybe there are behind the scenes, I've no idea. But there are so many occasions, aren't there, when a player last minute goes to a club and you think, how well thought out is this?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean about that, the short term and the long term. From the player's perspective, he'd get probably more money at Chelsea, but in the long term, he might have been just performed so much more better at Arsenal because it's more suitable to his playing style. And then maybe, you know, if you're trying to think of getting a move to a Barcelona or a Real Madrid, as everyone sort of says is the pinnacle of football, could have done that off the back of it. Whereas at Chelsea, and even Chelsea's recent history of not doing very well with forwards and them having a bad, I can say reputation, but having just bad performances off the back of it, but he's got a lot of money in his pocket, then it's a bit of a trade-off. I think irrespective of data, I think the agent's done really well in playing two clubs off each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, it's a different game, that, isn't it, than what we're talking about, and just the psychological value of that and selling something is very clever.
Which agents are very, very good at. But yeah, I do think it's something that players should think about more, if they're not already, but certain players, especially young players, to think, okay, what is my longer term route here? You can think about getting a quick however many million pounds in your pocket at a young age, or think, well, if this team is going to play more transitional style, then I'd rather go to them because it would suit my playing profile, because there's going to be more space to go into, versus a more possession based style versus more of a, I don't know, long ball style, whatever it may be. You think not just that club wants me, it's, do I want to go to that club, and is it going to maximize my skill set? Yeah. Or is it going to actually devalue me, and by the time I'm 25 I'm on the fringes of the squad and my next move is maybe going to be to a lower club than I'm at now? So
yeah,
it's hard to see at the time, but that's where you need good support around you, good experience and good wisdom, which isn't necessarily always the case with an agent.
Yeah, yeah.
But because they obviously want to make more money for the player, which makes themselves more money as well.
Yeah.
But using data, I suppose, can take away that emotion, and can provide you with a comprehensive report, like the sort of examples that we've given, to show that there might be actually a better way to make your next move.
I had a thought then in my head about another Chelsea signing who unfortunately got sent off. I say unfortunately, stupid thing, wasn't it? But João Felix obviously didn't last very long in a Chelsea shirt before his suspension. But he's another one who has obviously arrived this window. And it just got me thinking when you were talking about long-term and short-term there. He obviously, what age did he sign for Atletico Madrid? He was sort of 19, wasn't he, maybe? Mm. And I think he's 23 now. I might have got those wrong, year either side. But that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he obviously was sort of 127 million euros or whatever it was to sign him. And he went to a team that basically killed the life out of his playing style because of the manager who was there. So in the long term, has that done him any good, João Felix?
No, I don't think so, because of all the reasons that you alluded to, with Diego Simeone being such a defensive-minded manager, playing, yeah, okay, played three at the back for quite a bit of time, but mainly a 4-4-2 that wasn't a 4-4-2 in an attacking, get your wingers wide and really kind of go for it in a sort of transitional style, a Manchester United of the 90s. It was staying in a kind of a mid to low block and making sure that even your attacking players had really good defensive discipline.
Yeah.
João Felix is not the sort of person that you want to do that. You want to build your team around a João Felix,
yeah,
which is why he was so good at Benfica. And that's really simplifying it, obviously simplifying 4 years worth of his football. But when people were asking, like, how do you think he'll get on at Chelsea? I wasn't really sure how to answer it, because he has the skill set to be kind of any player he wants to,
yeah,
be. And as you say, he's still only 23, but he hasn't been able maybe to show just how good he is. He's been very good for his national team as well, but he can play those sort of intricate passes. But everyone speaks about how much he's able to, quite rightly. He's able to dribble, he's able to play really good progressive passes. But that's also because of the way that Atletico play,
yeah,
is that they need to be very vertical very quickly when they have the ball, because of how they sort of sit off and then spring counter-attack. So another example of how the playing style of the team has completely influenced and impacted the style of the player.
Yeah.
And as a result, he's now having to have a January, like as you say, when he made the move for over 100 million euros, compared to now having a January transfer on a loan to try and, I guess, as you say, rekindle his career,
yeah,
seems kind of odd. So it's exactly the point that we're making here with that Felix example.
That it might not have been a good fit initially, despite a massive fee and, you know, on paper quite a good... I guess the thing is, from my point of view, not knowing anything about data, that there's still the element with signings, whether they be January, whether they be summer, there's obviously a little bit more of a kind of panic stations in January occasionally, isn't there, and things are probably less thought through. But a high profile signing will still have, in, I'd want better words, but all I can think of, a sexy element to it, as in like an attractive signing for a club is like, let's bring in someone with a name or star quality, or let's make a big transfer for our fans to get behind. Like, there's such an Everest-sized mountain to climb with trying to get data-driven decisions into the forefront of everyone's mind, is there? Because everyone seeing João Felix sign for Chelsea is going to go, wow, like João Felix has just turned up, rather than thinking, how well is this fit? And that's probably true of so many signings, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the same could be said about managers at this sort of time of the year, because it's always within the context of how the team is doing, rather than it being a kind of a clean slate when you're starting, you're getting a new manager in the summer, pre-season, etc. You've got the same with the player, able to train with the players and then kind of start the new season. And even in the first five games, you think, okay, there's time for them to get settled. Whereas João Felix had the pressure of, in that Fulham game, his first half was fantastic, by the way.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need to expand upon the fact that he did get sent off. But it was that kind of, you have to make an instant impact. We haven't got time for five games for you to get settled. No. Where it was just, it's the context. Context is key. New year, but same old mark.
We are back.
I completely agree that the context behind it is really important. And that's why there's so much clamour to get the, as you say, the sexy signings in through the door at certain points, rather than it just being at the start of the season.
And also, I guess another element to this is also going for someone who's a, inverted commas, sexy signing in a position you perhaps don't need, as opposed to one that you actually do, but because someone's available and it'll make a statement for your fans or for whoever you're trying to do it for. If it's Todd Boehly, if I'm saying his name right, I think he just likes signing people, doesn't he? Despite, you know, just for his collection. I mean, someone like, I read a lot at the moment, and you know way more about this team than I do, but Liverpool, desperate for a central midfielder. And I know their transfer policy in recent years is to be wait for the right person. But then they went and signed Cody Gakpo, which I've actually seen a lot of Liverpool fans on Twitter and whatever, arguably, admittedly, quite sort of it clued up data analytics-y sort of people, but sort of saying, well, that's great, but that's not what we kind of need right now. And do you think sometimes that takes over making decisions rather than focusing on what you actually need?
Yeah, I think it comes back to your wider point that in January there's far more, I guess, kind of panic. There's far more pressure for all the reasons that I mentioned, is that you got to do something to appease the fan base a little bit. And all of those rational business decisions, those data decisions that you want to make, sometimes do go out the window, because football inside a football club, I don't know firsthand, but from the people that I've spoken to, can be chaotic sometimes. And just the rule book completely goes out the window. So the Cody Gakpo example is a really good one. I don't think Liverpool necessarily needed to strengthen in the front line. You mentioned about the midfield, but I don't, as much as anything, I also don't think they needed to strengthen in the front line, because they've got so many players who can come back from injury. When they come back, when Luis Diaz comes back, when Roberto Firmino comes back, when Diogo Jota comes back, Cody Gakpo might not necessarily get the same game time. So what's the sort of the long-term strategy there?
Yeah.
And granted, his numbers were very strong, but unproven in a top five European league, if you think about it. I know that Eredivisie is getting stronger, but it's not quite the same as playing against a set sort of Premier League defence. But yeah, I think the point still remains, when you're parting with millions and millions of pounds, if you can't get the right player in, then don't part with that money. I still think Liverpool's approach in that regard, and a lot of clubs' approach in that regard, to not just buy any old player or the fifth player down the list, is still the right one. But as you said, there is that pressure from the fan base to have someone through the door in January, because if you're not doing very well, something needs to change.
Absolutely.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
going to come back in with a new year, new Ryan, play devil's advocate persona, Mark, which you must be excited about. I'm going to say, so obviously, data can tell you so much. Data can profile the players correctly, tell them their value on the pitch, etc., etc. But is there an argument to say that occasionally data can only take you so far, which I know there is, but I'm just making the point anyway, that a player might look a good fit for a club because of the profile that they are and that the research the team has done, etc., etc. But sometimes it just doesn't work out for whatever reason. I'm thinking of the gentleman who has just arrived at Man United up front, Wout Weghorst, from Burnley. And when Burnley signed Weghorst, I remember distinctly we did at the start of like 2021 when we sort of looked at the 23 toolbox and we were profiling players and using the radars. We put down Wout Weghorst as almost like similar to Harry Kane in terms of his output and all that sort of stuff for Wolfsburg. So I would have thought for Burnley that was just an absolute shoo-in, an absolute golden signing. And that really didn't go very well, did it? And I read an article from The Athletic actually this week about sort of dressing room problems that he had, etc., etc. So sometimes there are things you can't account for, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but I would also argue that the same point remains there, that he was playing with Burnley players who weren't maximising his skill set. He was coming into a team that was struggling, fighting relegation, and they ultimately obviously did get relegated, coming from a team that only about 18 months before, in a Wolfsburg team that was pushing for Champions League and got Champions League that season. The season that he came to Burnley, Wolfsburg dropped off a cliff and all of the players, the value all went down. I think they finished bottom half that season, having finished fourth the season before. So his stock was high and then it sort of went low for various different reasons. But that fit was that if you're not given the service or you're not given the opportunity to maximise your strengths, then you're not going to show yourself to be all that good.
Yeah.
I think the reverse is true here in terms of what he could offer to Manchester United, is that the expectation of him is so low because everyone's like, this is the Burnley reject. This is the guy who can't even score in the Premier League. They scored, I think, maybe two. This isn't going to work out at all. And then he's going to, well, he may exceed expectations because he's in a team that's flying high. It's going to maximise his skill set. He's going to have good players around him who can give him service. And that stylistic fit, it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. Yeah, sometimes it's just the exact right fit. Who knows what can happen? And that's why, from a data perspective, you have predictive models to try and obviously understand what could or could not happen. And you weight your confidence in that, and sometimes it's not always perfect, but that's why you have to kind of go with either what the data is telling you or go with your inference. But I think that Weghorst example is a perfect example that's going to be the opposite of all the things we've said, where it's like the expectation of them is so high. I think the expectation of them is so low because of his recent past in the Premier League, at least, and then you put good players around him and that fit just clicks.
I got to go on a slight tangent here because it really made me laugh. I was watching the Man United Palace game when Weghorst made his debut, and there was obviously a lot of chat on the Twitter feeds, on the data, from the data and analytics to, you know, people, and there was a lot of obviously then on TV, the punditry, etc. And basically, he had an okay first half, I think, from my eye. But the things he was good at was coming to collect the ball, having a decent touch and laying it off. And you know, it was kind of he's got good feet for a big man, kind of on TV. And then every time it was pumped into the box, he was like, that's what he's there for, that's what he's come for. And it was a bit like all the data people were kicking off because they were like, that's not what he's actually any good at. Like, and it was just really funny.
Completely.
The two worlds.
Completely. And that's why Manchester United have done that, because they know that also, again, stylistically, Ten Hag really likes to have a number nine who will be able to stretch the defence and pin the defenders back to make space for the attacking midfielders, the likes of Bruno Fernandes, to pick up the pockets elsewhere. He does like them to have an aerial presence, and let's have it right. He's a big lad.
He's taller than you by some distance, actually.
Yeah, he's actually not that good in the air when you actually look at it, but he's still able to compete for aerials. And you also, Erik ten Hag also wants someone who's able to link the play, as you saw in the Palace game already. So he had Klaas-Jan Huntelaar when he was at Ajax. He had a Sebastian Allaire. And Sebastian Allaire is another example of the point I'm making, where he didn't do very well at West Ham at all, but he was played in exactly the right way that suited his skill set at Ajax, scored for fun, scored in the Champions League, got a move to Borussia Dortmund off the back of that. So people thought that he was an absolute dud.
A flop
at West Ham, but it was just that it wasn't the right fit. So it comes back to that point of, should there have been a duty of care from Allaire and his team to, on when he was going to West Ham, think, is this actually the right move for me? You think about Gianluca Scamacca now. He was doing really well at Sassuolo, but there was a couple of question marks over him. But he's not doing very well at West Ham. But it's because I don't think that they're maximising his skill set either. So it's all about getting the right player tactically to fit. The data can help that, of course. The analyst's tactical eye, the video, the real life scouting comes into that. All of our greatest hits here in one episode, Ryan.
You are bringing them out for the 2023 album.
All of the above, but I still think these things are important. And I think speaking about it in the context of now, January transfer window, it's having that kind of rational head to know to maximise the transfer market in general.
Well, before we go, I'm going to just a bit of a roundup then in terms of January signings from all the research and work you've been doing recently. Which signings are standing out to you as good ones, and which ones don't look like quite a good fit? I don't know, that's very broad.
Yeah, I think there's not too many to choose from.
There hasn't been that many big ones, has there? There hasn't been any massive outlays.
No, and
Chelsea aside.
I was going to say, there rarely is too often in January. I think Leandro Trossard, I think, is an interesting one. And the reason I think it could be a shrewd one is because he's such a versatile player. And if Martinelli's injured, he could go on the left side. He could even maybe play as a wing-back. He could offer Arsenal a different option in terms of their wider formation. He could maybe come inside and plays maybe instead of Xhaka, for example, but Arsenal have a really settled side. So I think that's a really shrewd one to bring Trossard in. I think not that it's so hard to predict, that's the point, isn't it? But the Mudryk example that you mentioned before, I think that the way that he's been playing a lot for Shakhtar has been where he's had a lot of space in front of him. He's been able to have those transitional moments, kind of like the Felix example that we gave. And he's so fast, he's so dribbly, he's so skillful. But if you're playing against Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park and you've got two banks of four or whatever, you've got a low block, it's not maximising his skill set quite in the same way. And time will tell, but I don't know whether he will be able to show the main attributes that he has in a Chelsea shirt quite in the same way that he has for Shakhtar.
Interesting. I also have to admit, I didn't know a lot about him. And my partner is a Arsenal fan. And she said to me out of the blue, she was like, oh, have you seen about Modric? Potentially signed for Arsenal. And I was like, Modric? Why are they going after him? He's a bit. Is that what Arsenal need right now? Took me a very long time to realise that that's not what was happening. If only, though, can you imagine?
It would be a good move. I'd like to see that, a return to the Premier League for Luka Modric. I mean, the Modric one as well, which I just find funny, is that they've signed him to an 8.5-year deal.
That's a long old time.
I don't know why it's 8.5. Well, I suppose it's because actually it's in January. I've just realised that was stupid.
The brains behind the Football Fanalytics podcast.
Yeah, I just...
This is what he's like under the surface, people.
It's late. I'm tired. But what I thought was funny was that I saw Liam Toomey, who was the Chelsea writer at The Athletic, tweeted that if he sees out his contracts for 8.5 years, he'll be only 18 months away from being eligible for a testimonial. Which you think of as like the legends of the game. I don't know why it's just
Chelsea's longest ever player.
Yeah, such a long deal for... I know that he's a young player. I don't quite know exactly why it is 8.5 years. But
I bet it's something to do with, and this is allegedly because I have absolutely no idea and I don't want to be done for any... Not that Todd Bowley's listening to this. If you are, Todd, hello. I bet it's something to do with the structuring of the deal, surely. It must be like 10 million every year or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Because... eight and a half. I mean, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine if they're stuck with him and they don't want to get rid of it. Oh, yeah, I can't even think about that. Anyway, I mean, I found that very interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's always good to chat transfers, but also about maximising the market. Again, it's a thread that we've always spoken about and using data to do that. So we have rolled through some greatest hits, Ryan, but I'd have it no other way.
You haven't said hard, cold facts yet, and I missed that.
Yeah, true. Tune in. Well, leave that on a hook. Tune in next time. Maybe you'll hear some more of the old greatest hits. But thank you, Ryan, as ever, for your time. Being in the same room to chat football is always really enjoyable. And thank you to you guys, the listeners, for tuning in and for being so patient with us, because I know that it's been a little while since we've last been.
There's some listeners still out there.
Yeah, for both of you remaining and listening. Yeah, thank you for supporting us since the start. No, hopefully you guys do enjoy it, even if it might not be as regular as obviously we'd hope. But yeah, thank you as ever, and keep sharing the podcast with your friends. And yeah, feel free to get in contact with us as well. You know how to do that. We are at Fanalytics Pod on Twitter and Instagram, or of course you can get in contact with us over email, fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Happy New Year, everyone, I suppose.
That is the last time you can say
the last
it.
Time the last I time I can say it. Enjoy the rest of your week, everybody, and hopefully we will see you next time.
Podcast Network.